Good morning. Please turn to Psalm 46. Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. Selah. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when the morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for this day. Thank you for bringing us here together again, that we may learn and study your word. I pray that, Lord, you make our hearts attentive today, that you would be with us. Please bless the time of worship and the fellowship that is to follow. In Jesus' name, amen.
All righty. Well, we are going to carry forward here, carry on, go forward. Genesis 25, verses 1 through 28. Isn't that what I told you, Mr. Dan? Didn't I tell you through 28? Okay. A little bit of an interesting section here. My feeling was this is a section of transition. We're transitioning from the life of Abraham. We're going to quickly run through Isaac, and then we're going to really be back to focusing on the next major character in the story of Genesis, that would be Jacob. But this is, to me, it came across as very much a transition section here. There are many theories on how we got the book of Genesis. It's been noted that you can see a theme through the book of what are called toledoth in Hebrew, or generations, where section, you can look at this Genesis as in chunks, as we learn about these people, this part, this generation of people, like from Adam to Noah, and then the generation of Noah, and then the generation past that. And in fact, I found a little chart here, talks about them. As you can see here, starting back even the use of the word even in Genesis 2, the generations of the heavens and the earth, it talks about. And then the generations of Adam, generations of Noah, the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Terah. And then this, and today we're going to finish up Abraham's life, and then talk about, and then we'll have the toledoths of Ishmael and Isaac today. So it's interesting. I mean, to me, this makes a lot of sense that Genesis was a inspired collection of verbal traditions of the family, and this, and the important what God thought was important about the lives of each of these individuals as they went through, and what was important for us, for what He wanted us to know about this time. And so I'm going to start by just reading the first section here. Genesis 25:1-6 says, Abraham took another wife. Advertisements. Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shuah. Jokshan fathered Saba and Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Ashuram, Leshuram, Letushim, brother, and Lumimim. Sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanak, Abadah, and Eldah. All these were the children of Keturah. Abraham gave all he had to Isaac, but to the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts, and while he was still living, he sent them away from his son Isaac eastward to the east country. So we have here some information, and there was. It was very interesting to look into this, and I thought I'd just sort of take you through what I found out about this. First of all, if you go and you look at the different translations of this of Genesis 25:1. You're going to find some variations. And if somebody would have the KJV, I would like for them to read the KJV on this. Somebody have that?
Yes, sir.
Can you read it?
What verses? 25:1. Then again, Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah.
I thought it was the KJV. That's not what I was expecting you to say. Hang on a second. Let's look and see which one. Oh, it was ISV, where there's several that have this flavor to it here. Abraham had taken another wife. So the reason why this came up to me, for me, was as I was thinking about this, I was again going back to. I find it providential how our teachings hit sometimes, because I basically started this 4 weeks ago, and now I get to finish it. So that's really cool, because if you recall, I made the timeline, and the timelines, here's a timeline that, again, let me try to make it where it's easier to see. And so I was thinking about this in terms of the time and lives and the timeline of his life, and I was thinking, this is pretty interesting, because as you read it in the English and the KJV, but especially in the ESV, it seems if you just read it, you would think this is happening now in this chronological order as we read it in, you know, just straight chronological order there. However, what it does mean, and it doesn't mean that this isn't what this doesn't mean that this isn't the way it happened, but what it means is that here is Abraham. I'm sorry for my scribble, but here's Abraham along the bottom. And this is Isaac getting married. And the next thing we hear about is Keturah. And if this is the case, Abraham is 140. Now, to make it easy, let's assume we got our numbers. Remember, we've talked about this a lot. You know, what does 140 mean for Abraham? Does it mean the same for us? I personally don't think so, but I'm not going to be dogmatic about that. I'm not going to build a doctrine on that. However, let's just play like it. Let's just say that since he lived 175, let's just say that a normal lifespan is 87 and a half. If a normal lifespan is 87 and a half, that's half of 175. And that makes it easy to think about Abraham's life, because you could just take whatever number you see and half it. Okay, it's not that he wasn't 175 when he died. It's just that it would be as if he was 87 and a half. I still think that's probably a little bit long, but we'll just say, I mean, not everybody lives to 87 and a half. Just our good folks get close and live to 87 and a half. I'm just kidding. But my point is that even at 87 and a half, you're going to take these numbers, you're going to divide them by half. Even at that, he's 70 at this point. 70 in our years. Just trying to give you some conceptual to think about it. Okay, so he's 70, and if this is happening now, which it could, because God can do all things, I have no problem with it. And I think biologically it could even happen. He's 70, he's fixing to take another wife / concubine, and he's going to have 6 more children, at least. That's all the sons. Could be some daughters, we don't know. They're not always listed. He's going to take 6 of them. He's going to have 6 more, which I'm just going to be gracious and say, like, I mean, theoretically, it could be 6 years. Like, boom, 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 theoretically. But let's just say a year and a half between kids. That's going to be 9. That's going to be 9 years to have those 6 children, which puts him at 80, or almost 80 when he's getting his last child from Qatar. Now, all that is possible. However, what if... So what that does for me is it makes me say, okay, I just want to see if there's any reason why I should think about it differently. Because we know that not everything is in perfect chronological order as we're given it. Sometimes it skips around a little bit. So I did some digging. I even asked old John Gill what he thought about this. And I thought it was very interesting because, again, this is just an opinion. John Gill is not an authoritative, inspired person. No?
Gill in Greek means the Baptist.
Gill the Baptist?
John the Baptist.
Okay, I got you. So, prophet, right? But I thought it was very interesting, so I thought, let's see what Gil says about this. I didn't know what to expect. And it's very interesting. If you read his commentary on verse 1, and it says, it'll say, and then 3 years after the death of Sarah, Abraham takes Keturah. That's what he says for verse 1. You go to verse 2, and then it says something. Actually, it says basically something totally different. That in the grammar, it doesn't necessarily mean that this happened in this chronological order. So I thought that was kind of humorous that he would do that. But looking at the grammar, what does it say? Well, the words then and the words took are both grammatically what's called consecutive imperfect. Halif, I think that's how you say that. Hilfil. And what I found was if you combine, when you have a word that has those qualifications, those grammatical qualifications, past tense and it's consecutive and imperfect and that sort of thing, what it means is this indicates something right here, you can read it for yourself, a series of changes or transformations, or I think you could put actions. The subject causes them to happen in the past. Okay, so to me, this cracks the door open to that. Maybe we should be more translating this like we saw ISV. He had taken, okay? He had taken, which means that this doesn't mean this was necessarily happening at this point in his life. I think if we think about it, That makes some sense. It's not mandatory per se, but it does make some sense because what we have here is we've had the life of Abraham, and we've been tracking chronologically, which is why it throws you off that maybe at the end there's something a little bit out of chronology. But you've had these major events going on in his life, and what's fixing to happen next in verse 7 is we're going to learn about Abraham dying. And to me, as I read this, it makes a lot of sense that the person compiling and writing this down, Moses or whomever, They're going along telling us about Abraham's life, and it's a chronological explanation of his life. And now we've come to this, we've gotten Isaac married, and what's fixing to happen is we're fixing to start talking about Isaac because Abraham is about to die. But he's about to die, but he's about to die in 35 years, actually. So, but in the story, that's apparently the next biggest thing that's fixing to happen. But the author says, you know what, though? I need to mention Keturah. She hasn't been a big part of this story, but we can't finish Abraham's story without mentioning Keturah, because there's some important individuals that came from Abraham through Keturah. And if we don't mention them here, we're about to be done with Abraham's story, and it won't make any sense to put it somewhere else. I mean, I'm throwing a lot of words into this person's mouth, but I'm just saying, if you think about it, that could have been one of the ways this happened. And we're going to talk, when we get to the actual, in just a minute, we're going to talk about some of these people. And I think we'll talk about that in a minute. However, so the first word there where it says, and here it puts it as "and again," could grammatically and from the root word be "additionally." So the word could be "additionally." So in addition to what? In addition to, we just got through talking about Isaac and all this stuff been going on. So in addition to this, Abraham, and then we have here "took," which in the verb tense seems like it could be "had taken," just as easy as "took." "Took" is pretty broad, because "took" can be taken as "I took it yesterday," or I took it just now, I took it." So the word itself is not as clear on its tense, although it's appropriate. So it's not an appropriate word. It could make you think more than one thing. But the actual verb tense that's listed for the words are this consecutive imperfect meaning, made something happen in the past. So Abraham made this happen. What did he make happen in the past? He made happen the taking of Keturah as his concubine wife. So I think that this likely is not, this is most appropriate to be before this point in his life. Now, the question is, when before this point in his life? Well, that I think is actually not, I don't know that I can come to a complete, I don't think we're actually told that directly per se. In fact, if you look back, if we go back to this the timeline, it's an interesting mental exercise here. So if we go back here and we remember, I'm just going to review this for everybody. I didn't put it on here because it'd been way too much information. But so here's Abraham, 75 years old, and he's going to leave Haran. These numbers were given in the text. I didn't write down the verses, but we can get them for you if you want. So at this time, he's married to Sarah, and she's 65. Because we know she's 10 years younger from another text. I don't think it says that she was 65 when he left, but it tells us later she was 10 years younger. So we know that because of another. So Abraham's 75. Remember, let's go through. Remember what's going to happen. What's going to happen through his life? They're gonna go to Canaan. They leave Haran, go to Canaan. Then they're gonna go down to Egypt because of the famine, and that's when the Pharaoh is gonna want Sarah, and she's gonna do all the stuff about being half sister thing. Then the next big thing that happens is Lot separates. They separate. That's the next thing chronologically in the storyline. The next thing is Lot gets captured, and Abraham goes and rescues him. And then the next thing that happens before we get to here is God appears and gives him the first covenant. He appears to him. They do the splitting of the animals, walking through the halves. That all happens before this right here. This is also the most clear, I think it's implied when he's about to leave Haran, and he says, "Go and I'll make you great," and that sort of thing. But this covenant is the one where he's really clear about you're going to have a son that's going to be your heir. Okay, so I'm just going through the history right here, right quick. Then Hagar bears Ishmael for him. Okay, by the way, 11 years. Don't let the gap, it's not all necessarily exactly proportional to the times right here. We got 11 years. We got 14 here, see? So I didn't draw it quite proportional. So this is actually more time than here. So if you slid this over, it might have been more better. Is that good? 14 years, 40 years, and then if you put out his death out here at 175, that's 35 years. So we got, those are the time gaps here. So here's second covenant with God. God comes again, talks to him again, says, hey, you know, don't worry about it. You're going to have a son. It's going to be through Sarah. What are we here? He destroyed, then we have the destruction of Sodom's story next as the scriptures go. We got him going back down to near the Philistine area and got Abimelech, and we got the whole thing with Sarah going on there again with Abimelech. And then we have Sarah bearing Isaac. That's at this point right here. 14 years here, 11 here, 40 here. Okay. Then we got Hagar sent away when when Isaac's weaned, whenever that is, whatever amount of time that is. We don't know what time that is. And then somewhere in here, after this, exactly, we don't know exactly again because we're not told, they go do the whole Isaac sacrifice on the mountain. Okay? Okay, somewhere in here. So again, if we half his ages to put it back more in our perspective, we got he's 37 and a half, he's 43, he's 50 years old, and he's fixed to be 70 out here. 40 years here, 70. And now, in Genesis, we just had this happen. We just finished talking, learning about this. And now chronologically, we're sitting right here. So my thing is, I think it probably, from all the other data, I'm thinking Keturah was somewhere back in here. But where, I don't know the answer to that. We do know from 12:5 that he left Haran with all these peoples he had acquired. Now, it could be that he acquired Keturah back here. Remember, she's a concubine wife, so she's a slave wife. So he could have. It's possible. But it doesn't mean he did. Follow me? Everybody follow me? Hey, you all over here. I've been over here. I'm just making sure y'all are still with me. Can you see okay? Am I in the way? Kind of. I'm sorry. I'm trying to stay out of the way. All right. So that's interesting to me. I mean, it's not definitive. So, now right here was where that first covenant, splitting the animals, walking through. Very interesting statement there. Literally thinks his head servant is going to be his heir. Remember that? He says, hey, okay, well, I guess my head servant's the one that's going to be this heir for me. And he in the text, Abraham says, he says, I'm childless. Okay, childless. And then God says, no, it'd be your very own son. So, on the face, that would seem to like say, well, there weren't any children. No children. The only thing I can say to that is, I do not know how he would have seen a slave concubine's children if he would have, if there's some sort, I'm just saying that, like, I haven't read definitively about that. It would seem to me, though, that this is probably, it would seem no children. Go ahead. Right. Right, I got it. And the only not pushback, but the only thing that leaves a question mark in my head is that I remember reading somewhere or hearing somewhere there was this thing about like if a wife, if a number one wife literally like purposely said, "Here's my handmaiden, here's my slave, have a child, and it will be my child." There was this something about that I remember that was like, maybe that was different than just, oh, I'll go buy this slave and I'll have her as a wife. I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. You could be 100% right. I just have that. It's like, I don't know. So I leave it as an I don't know. I mean, it maybe makes it much less possible in the whole scheme, but it is important that we remember that was said right here. Okay, right here. All right. So, so then we have Hagar being sent away. And what's interesting is I think we just read this in this little section here, is that it says in our section that, what did it say about the sending them away? I'm trying not to leave that page right now.
Sent away from Isaac.
Yeah. Yeah, but to the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts while they were still living and sent them away. And so, everything that I was reading was like, you know, who were these plural concubines? So more than one. And this, so I mean, it seems obvious that at least Hagar and Keturah would fit that bill. It could be that's all. That, it could just be the two of them, right? But, you know, many people were pointing out that, man, I say many people, I was just, you know, it could have been more, but we're just not told about them. But they may not, but they don't have to be. So no reason necessarily to go there. However, the sons of the concubines, that would include Ishmael in that list. The sons of the concubines were given gifts and sent away. So that made me think, well, if Keturah was in this area here and having his sons here, remember there's 16 years available for Havilah's sons, it could be that when he sent Hagar away, he also sent Keturah away. That would be that, and this could just be a reflection back on when this happened. That he says, hey, and it says there, and he sent them away. And another clue is that these concubines were sent away. Why? To remove them from what? Being around Ishmael. And so, it makes me think, well, maybe, you know, the obvious in the text is this conflict between Hagar and Sarah and Ishmael and Isaac. But, I mean, that doesn't mean, that wouldn't mean, I mean, his bad attitude could be bleeding over to the others if there were others already there. We don't know there were. We don't know they weren't. So what we're doing is talking about all the internal evidence, you know, not evidence, but all the internal clues here. So I find it interesting that the text says that the sons were all given, and it says of the concubines, plural. So even if Keturah is sent away later somehow to make that correct would be that Abraham somehow also gives Isaac some gifts because he would be one of the sons of the concubines. So Ishmael. So that's why it makes me say, well, maybe she got sent away at the same time because Abraham's thinking, well, if Ishmael's going to be causing all these problems, I probably should just send the others away too. Also, it would give us a clue. It also does give us a clue into Abraham's mindset that it wasn't. He did it not in good faith, but he did it. You know, he's like he wasn't. It wasn't like a bad parting for them necessarily. He's like, here, I want to make sure you're taken care of if possible. I'm gonna give you these gifts, send you off to prosper, not just to die, kind of thing. So there's that. All right, so.
Yes
and no, but see, because she's a slave, so he can really do whatever he really wants to. And if he's sending her away with enough means and capital, so to speak, to take care of herself, then he's in a sense he's just taking care of her, but not personally under his personal umbrella. Does that make sense? But he has the right as the owner of the slave to do that because she's a slave. That's what a concubine would be, a slave wife. So then there's another thing. It's like, since we don't know when Isaac, when we did the whole going to the mountain thing, there's another school of thought out there. I'm not saying that I go along with it necessarily, but there's a school of thought that says that he comes back from the mountain experience, and there's a rift between him and Sarah at this point, and maybe that's when Katara comes in. I'm just throwing it out there very loosely in case you run across it. I'm not saying. And that's why they would have not been living in the same location whenever she dies, or the potentially not live in the same location. And Abraham has to go to her deathbed, basically, and mourn her. Those are things that are out there. Because we don't have, there's nothing definitive to say one way or the other. So, you know, you can take it however you want to. I just thought it was interesting, and I was looking for those clues. And we have different little clues along the way to give us an idea about how you feel about what was more or less likely. But the reality is that at some point, Abraham took Katara's wife and bore six sons through her. Does anybody have anything else they want to throw out about all that? Okay. So there you go. Let's see here. One person did point out there's like, again, I don't think this is definitive, but we have, in a few minutes, we're going to get to Ishmael's Toledoth, his generations, and we're going to, so this is sort of like the little generations of Katara we're going through. It doesn't label it that in the text. And it's interesting that for Katara, we're told her sons and her son's sons and her son's sons. Got three generations in the text for Katara. For Ishmael, we got Hagar's son Ishmael, and then Ishmael's sons. But we don't have that next generation. So some are pointing out that, well, we got more information, more. So maybe Katara's children were much older and had time to get to their grandchildren. But that's really, to me, not a strong argument, because the information could have come later. I mean, this is being compiled probably, you know, it's after even Katara's. I mean, they're all dead and gone, basically, when this is being put together. So I don't really think that's a very strong argument at all. You might see that argument out there.
Some of the generations seem to go to a certain point, like the generation of Ishmael goes to his sons, because there's 12 sons of Ishmael, okay? And so we have a similarity between Ishmael and Jacob. And I hope I'm not stealing your thunder in this, but just I'm trying to show that there is it goes to a point where you see a significant setting up of the nation of. And so the third generation might be because the second generation didn't really have a significant setting up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is where we're going in just a minute.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But so I just did have to ask though, did you get the 14 generations from David from listening to Wes Huff? I talked to.
Oh yes.
Yeah. I listened to it this way. I thought I bet that's where he been. I bet that's where he had that from. So that's pretty cool. All right. So the next thing it. Let's see. Make sure I made through all this. Yeah. Okay. The next thing to talk about are Katara's children. Abraham's children from Katara, same difference. And I do believe the reason why it went to her, to that next generation, is so they could talk about Midian and some of the others that are there. Because if they stop, they don't get to them. And the reason why Ishmael stopped with just the 12 is, but past that, nothing relevant. Or, you know what I mean by relevant. Same reason they only chose 14 of the people to make those numerical links, so to speak. So I think it's all in the same vein. So that's why I say I think that argument is pretty weak as far as an argument. But you'll hear it out there. All right, so So like I said, the next we have Qatar's children, Midian. I think it's pretty well, I don't know if established, but it's thought that the Midian was the father of the Midianites. If you remember, Jethro was a Midianite. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, was a Midianite. And then later on, Joseph sold to the Midianites, I believe. And then...
Okay.
Yeah, it's fun to talk with them sometimes.
No, that's cool. Well, actually, that wasn't even on my list. That was just a miss. It was like the other was in the Gideon. Gideon is hiding from the Midianites when he's threshing the grain down in the, you know, in the hole. He's hiding from the Midianites because they're the ones that come are attacking, and then when he gets his army of 300 together, that's who they go to attack, or the Midianites. So to me, it makes a lot of sense that if we don't get to that next generation, we don't even know about Midian being, here we have Midian, a nation, another nation has come from Abraham's loins, so to speak. So that's, to me, the more proper, more probable reason why we went all the way to that third generation there from Abraham. So Midianites would have been Abraham's Midian would have been his great-great-grandson. No, his great, his not his great great, his great.
Just his son.
I think it's a grandson, right?
It just says
verse
2
has Jethro, Joseph's father.
Jokshan would have been. Oh, yeah, so we didn't have to go. Okay, well, but we've got the sons of Midian. I think that's why we got, because they want to include the sons of Midian, so that would be his grandsons. All right, so really that and the fact that Abraham does choose to send them away also, and they go to eastward, and this is going to come up later, that the east that they went to the east is going to come up later as well. Any questions there? All right. So moving forward, we go now to the death of Abraham. Abraham dies at 175. And again, just so to... what did I do with that? I don't think it's really relevant. So he's going to die at 125. He's buried. He's going to be taken and buried in the same cave that he bought for Sarah. And he's also going to be buried by Isaac and Ishmael. So read that real quick. These are the days of the years of Abraham's life, 175 years. Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And that right there is why I would say maybe 170. Now Isaac's going to live to 180. Okay, but Ishmael, we're fixing to find out, He's not gonna make it that long. So maybe the 175 was kind of semi-normal, not excessively long life for that time. Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah. Okay, another potential little clue going back to whether these other concubinal sons were considered true sons. Just another, they're not mentioned here. They didn't, or weren't invited to the funeral. So, apparently, no, I'm just kidding. They might have been invited. It's too far away to go. But anyway, they're not mentioned here as sons that buried him in the cave. All right. There Abraham was buried with Sarah, his wife. After the death of Abraham, God blessed Isaac, his son. And Isaac settled at Beer Lahar Heroi. Everybody remember where that is?
Yes.
That's the well, Hagar's well. And he came, he'd been there already before he came back to the Negev for to meet and where he met Rebecca. All right. That really finishes Abraham's life. And I think it's interesting and a blessing that his sons came back and buried him. And Ishmael and Isaac are there together. Very interesting. Does anybody have anything? Questions are so at this point, basically, this is wound up our I mean, from Genesis 12 to 25, we got is our Abraham. We're talking about Abraham and all the way that, you know, God interacted in his life, led him and did things for him, what he did. And now that's over. There's a transition. Before we get to Isaac, though, there's going to be we have a Toledoth of Ishmael. These are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's servant, handmaid, slave, however you want to say that, different translation, bore to Abraham. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael, named in the birth order. So here we have, you're making sure we understand, these are in the birth order. If y'all remember, the sons of Noah might be in different orders as they were spoken of. These are in birth order. Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael, and Kedar, Abdiel, Mibshan, Mishma, Duma, Masah, Hadad, Tama, Jeter, Nephish, Nephish, and Kedemah. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their villages and their encampments. 12 princes according to their tribes. These are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. He breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. They settled from Havilah to Shur, which is opposite Egypt, in the direction of Assyria. He settled over against his kinsmen. Settled over against all his kinsmen. Now this is the ESV rendering there. So we have these 12 sons of Ishmael. Again, it will be likened as unto the 12 sons of Jacob later in terms of a contrast. They each have their own tribes eventually, and they're labeled as 12 princes. Ishmael dies at 137. At this point, Isaac is 123 years old. And Isaac is going to be, let's see here. Ishmael dies at 137 years old. Isaac is 123 years old. Esau and Jacob would be 63 years old at this time for comparison and everything. Of course, they're not mentioned. We don't know what's, you know, at this point. I will say, though, that contrary to popular renderings of the Jacob, Esau, Isaac, the deception that we're fixing to read about, and just not in the next section, but the next chapter. Using the math and the dating and the ages given to us, that Jacob is close to 77 at the time of that when he does the deception for the birthright thing, and so this would be before he leaves. So they are still presumably with Isaac. You got something? Yeah, the blessing, not the stew thing, the blessing part. The blessing is still kind of a birthright kind of thing, but I mean, that, you're right as far as like, that's confusing to say it that way. So Ishmael doesn't, he only lives 137 years. Like I said, Isaac is going to live to be 180. So here's where the KJV. Read the KJV for verse 18. This is my KJV verse here, right?
And they dwelt from Havilah unto Shur, that is before Egypt, as thou goest toward Assyria. And he died in the presence of all his brethren.
Yeah. So you could tell if you. I mean, I can reread the ESV again, but there's many translations that give the KJV just says in the presence of all his brethren. But there's many other translations that want to render that he died in conflict with all his brethren. I personally think that's getting read into it because of the last. Thousands of years of conflict between the Arabs and the Jews. But I don't really think it's necessary in the text. I don't know why that came up. And I wanted to show you this. The words for... he dwelt from Havilah as far as Shur, which is upon the face of Egypt. As you go toward Syria, this against the face of all his brothers. See, the thing is, though, this upon and face are exactly the same words. So for some reason, why don't you just say upon the face of his brothers, not instead of saying against? There's no reason why it has to be an indication of conflict. In fact, if you think about it geographically and remember that he sent Keturah east, and now we have Ishmael, it said earlier was toward Egypt. Basically, all the brothers, all the descendants of Abraham are basically in a very small, they're relative to each other, they're near each other. And so I don't know enough, I guess. Maybe I'm just ignorant about why someone would choose upon here and against here. They just don't seem, I don't know why they would do that. So just... Don't read too. I would say don't read too much into that. Don't say, there's a prophecy that the Arabs and the Jews are always going to be fighting each other. It may be taken a little bit far, unless my ignorance is just. There's a reason why that would be the case, but. So even amongst the translators, they're not. It could simply mean that they lived between the sons of Qatar, the Midianites, and Egypt, and then Israel to the north. So basically saying they lived between them all. And historically, they were very nomadic anyway, so they're traveling kind of all in that area, not just like one little spot. I say little in reference to like the globe, not like they were just in like all within a mile of each other kind of thing. It was a long way, but I found it interesting. Those are the exact same words there. For some reason, they're moved around there. So that's all it says about Ishmael. Ishmael then, besides the reference to the Ishmaelites, and they come into Joseph. There's not very many more. Not that many more references to Ishmael in our scriptures. Anybody got anything they want to add to that, or questions or comments?
It's interesting that later on, Midianites are a problem to Israel. Edom is also, they're just all family, wider family.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we're fixing to talk about Edom, right?
Later on.
Well, we're fixing to talk about Esau, so. All right, yep. Next, we have the generations of Isaac, another Toledoth. And the first thing, well, let's just read it real quick, I guess. Let's see here. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together with her, and she said, "If it is thus, why is it happening to me?" So she went to inquire the Lord. I'll stop there for a minute. We'll finish that. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger." Yeah, I'll stop there. Okay, so back to our, where we kind of stopped. We start kind of taking a running start back into this. With Isaac, Rebekah comes to Isaac, and they're married. He takes her as a wife. She came from, from Bethuel of Padan Aram. Padan Aram just means the fields of that area of Mesopotamia versus the highlands. So it's just into more of a geographical description of that area. And here's where we're told exactly how old Isaac was. And then we're going to find out later how old he was when the boys were born. All right, so what do I have here? We also hear Isaac prays for Rebekah. We're going to find out that Isaac is 60 when the twins are born. So, but from the time Rebekah shows up, at least 39 years of barrenness. So it's not like she shows up.
Who shows up? Rebekah?
Rebekah.
Isaac was barren when he was 40.
You're right. 20 years, my fault. 20 years. 40 to 60. 20 years. 19 years of barrenness. Did I really? That's what I wrote. 19. Sorry. Anyway, thank you, though. So, 20 years, she shows up, and then it's 19 years before she gets pregnant. I'm just giving 9 months for the pregnancy. Because it says he was 60 when she was when they were born. So, just be careful. If you read this, it sounds like they get married, and he starts praying for her, and then she has a baby. So, but no, that's not the way it works. She's barren for 19 years. It doesn't mean, it doesn't say he prayed for 19 years, but he could have. But it's just, he prays for, at some point, could have prayed for, like, finally decided to pray. That happens sometimes. You ever happen? I know it happens to y'all. It happens to me. You're like, struggle. You go, why in the world am I struggling when I could just pray for God to help me? Oh, good grief, I should be praying for this a long time ago. Who knows? Maybe he did that, maybe he didn't. But he does finally pray, and the prayer is answered. Of course, he prays to Yahweh specifically, and Yahweh answers and grants his prayer. So I got a question. This is off the cuff. So does God always answer prayers? Okay.
Doesn't mean he answers on the way we want him
We had an internal discussion about this in our family worship, and I don't really like the idea of him answering a prayer. It says he granted her request. To me, to say he answered a prayer is like, so what? Like you say, it could have been a no, could have been a yes. But all it does is, I guess it does say that he never ignores a prayer. I'm not sure though. I had to think about whether God would ever just ignore a prayer. Seems like he might if it was from
wicked.
But then would the wicked ever really pray to him without him prompting them to pray? Like I said, that was just off the cuff. It was a good question. But here we have his specific, it says he grants her request, or grants Isaac's request for his wife. He granted his prayer, and Rebekah conceives. And then we have some interesting information in verse 22. Isaac prays for Rebekah, and then is granted. And now we have Rebekah pregnant. And we have something that says, the children struggled within her, and she said, if it is thus, why is this happening to me? And Rebekah, to her credit, her solution to this question is to go inquire of the Lord. Now, I talked to somebody who has born twins before. It's part of my research for this. And I was like, I don't know about y'all. I guess y'all probably figured this out, but I don't particularly just accept the status quo arguments a lot of times. And here we have another one of these status quo things that I've heard people take and say, oh, well, this was because they were going to fight later. It's Israel and Edom. And so God had them fighting in the womb ahead of time. And this is symbolic of all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, I don't mind that being true if I can, like, make sure that that's got to be the way. I mean, it's pretty, like, obvious that's what it is. And so it's interesting to me that this particular, where is it? This particular word right here, this particular string of, it's actually a conjunction and a verb there, okay? And this is the only time in the whole Bible it's put together this way. That's interesting. And if you go and look at the root word of it, every other time in the Bible, it's not translated struggle. It's actually translated, here it is for you, oppressed, crushed, bruised, beaten down. Okay. So again, I did my research and I said, hey, what's it like having twins inside you? Is it like seriously different from singlets? Is it a lot more painful or less, or what's it like? And because I'm trying to figure out what maybe Rebekah was feeling here, and my feedback said that, yes, sir.
Was this a survey pool of one?
Actually, it was a survey pool of at least two. One was hearsay, though. One was direct information, one was secondhand information. So, n equals 1.5. So, my study. So, actually 2.5. I mean, one, but 2 halves and a one. Two hearsays and firsthand. So, my firsthand report said, not really a lot different, but yes, you can, my firsthand report said that you can tell, she could tell that there was more than one moving around. And that was actually, she said, important there in that, because they wanted to make sure that both of them were active, right? So she was having to really concentrate and say, is this the same one? Or is this two of them? Is this somebody over here, somebody over there? So, but Betsy also said that, like, her grandmother had twins, and back then they didn't do the ultrasounds, and so it was very late before they maybe even at birth before they knew that this was the twin situation. And she heard reports from another situation where it was because, this feels like more than one, before ultrasounds and stuff, this feels like more than one, that there was an idea of maybe there's going to be more than one, there are going to be twins in there. Now, and this isn't firsthand, but I can tell you that when I've gone to a dystocia in a cow before where they're having problems having birth, when I go to examine that situation, as soon as my hand goes in, I can tell too many legs in the wrong spot. And that's my clue that I probably got twins in there. All this data to me with the grammar and the word, I wouldn't go there. I personally would not go and say, oh, this is two nations actually fighting in the womb kind of thing. And the next phrase also is real important, real interesting, because look, I mean, like literally, if I said to you, if so, why thus to me? See? If so, why thus to me? This is her question when she experiences this, whatever that is, exactly whatever that is. This is her question. If so, why thus to me? And so, if you Englishize that, it's kind of like, why is this going on? Why am I experiencing this? In fact, the if so seems to indicate she's asking, look, it's like, I haven't been able to get pregnant, and now I'm pregnant, but it feels like I'm about to explode. Why would God do this to me just to make me lose the babies or have a problem or something like that? So that's the flavor. That's the flavor in here. And so this could very easily, this struggle could very easily still be like she's feeling an oppression, she's feeling it's not feeling right. Of course, this is her first pregnancy, so she really doesn't know what to expect also. Of course, she's got other women around her trying to help her understand what to expect. So I'm sure that was helpful to some degree. It's not the same as having gone through it before. But still, and maybe even the other women are like, there's four bumps on there. Well, you're not supposed to have, but when they bump you and you see a little boost. So anyway, this is what I read this to be. And then she goes and she's inquiring, what's going on? Because she's like, maybe she's scared. Doesn't say it for sure, but she goes to God. She's inquiring, what is this? What's going on? And that's where we hear God's answer to her. And isn't God gracious to tell her? To like prophesy, in a sense, to tell her what's going to happen. Tell her, hey, basically, it's going to be okay, right? This is what's going on. You got two nations in your womb, so to speak. Okay? And so, to me, that was very interesting. Just the grammar and the words there are pretty interesting. So, when you look at them. And so, here we have Rebecca. She has this crushing, oppressive experience from the pregnancy. And she's like, why is this going on? What's going on? And she goes to Yahweh. And she says, please tell me what's going on. And that's where we get, there's two sons, two nations in your womb, and the older shall serve the younger. Now, this is Rebecca going to Yahweh. Now, I read some different things. It's like, did she just pray herself? Did she go to Isaac and say, talk to your God, talk to our God for me, or some other prophet to see? Because that was pretty common, to go to a prophet to find out what God wants to say. You inquire of God through a prophet a lot of times. He doesn't tell us. We just know that she went to Yahweh. Also, it doesn't tell us that she shared this information with Isaac, which would be interesting later on, possibly. But indeed, in verse 24, we find that, so when her days were fulfilled, she gave birth, and it's interesting. And indeed, there were twins. As if God was going to be wrong, give me a break. Indeed, there were? Why do we need an indeed there? But anyway, indeed, there were twins in her womb and came out. And don't you think that this really was, I mean, if I could just, it seems to me that this would be, well, I don't even have to say it seems. You know as well as I do, when God is faithful in His promises, what does that do to your faith? It builds your faith. So this must have built Rebecca's faith in Yahweh. Yahweh tells her, you got two babies in there, and all of a sudden, there they come. Now, that's, I'm not suggesting that they didn't know anything about twins back then, and they probably, because my reports back were that, you know, that's a lot of the ways that, you know, people could figure, oh, I think there's two in there. So, but still though, must have been a building of Rebecca's faith in Yahweh to have His word come true for her. And for them to be born alive. And for them to both make it and for her to make it, because that was implied in what God was saying. Hey, there's two nations. Don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. So there you go. Definitely back then, it was more common to not make it through a childbirth. So praise God could be praised through this, and they could give Yahweh the credit, not some other god. Okay, so then we have the twins are born. The first, ruddy all over like a cloak, hairy. Ruddy is a word meant, it implies reddish, and it's where the name Esau comes from. This could have been he was reddish from having blood all over him. It could have been that like a cloak could just be meaning it was all over, like a cloak would cover somebody from head to toe. He could have literally been hairy all over at birth potentially. There's a lot of ways this could be applied to Esau. And interestingly, the same word, ruddy, is used of David. And he's described as a youth. He was ruddy and handsome in appearance. So, you know, maybe he was... There's different ways this word ruddy, or besides literally red. Like literal. Could have been, potentially, but there's other ways that it was used as well. More figurative ways. The second... His brother also came out and took a hold of his heel. And so Jacob gets his name from this as well. They both get their kind of their names from their birth story. And so the idea of a heel grabber and the word supplanter, a supplanter is another, it's the idea of, I get my mind, I picture like somebody's chasing somebody and they grab their heel and trip them, and then they can win the race. They're in a race and they've supplanted them. They've overcome them. They've tricked them in a sense. And that's where all those implications of Jacob come from and his name there. Lastly, 27 and 28 today. It says, so grew the boys, and was Esau a man, a skillful hunter of the field, but Jacob a mild man dwelling in tents, and loved Isaac Esau because of the game he ate, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And this is a sort of a setup for the next chapter and a half, where we're going to read about the family relationships there between Jacob, Esau, Rebekah, and Isaac. And so, I'm not going to go into it there much. It's sort of a teaser for what's coming ahead. Right, Mr. Dan?
Right.
And so, that brings us to a transition to our next major events, and that's going to be basically the setup for the life of Jacob. This is going to be a setup for his life. And as he's going to be the father of the 12 tribes of Israel.